This is Deathless, written by Blue Jay Blue Skies and read by Mistborn Hero. A malevolent podfic rated for teen and up audiences and featuring the relationship John and Arthur Lester, with additional tags for fantasy, ghosts, modern setting. Getting to know each other. Ghost John, queer platonic relationships, emotional intimacy, reading books together. Summary: Arthur moves into a haunted house. The ghost that lives there is less than pleased. In hindsight, buying the ridiculously low-priced house with bill papers from the late 1700s and an appeal for condemnation on record was probably an ill-advised move. But Arthur still maintains that ghosts are not a typical nor rational thing to worry about when browsing real estate, and, well, his financial circumstances had been less than ideal after the whole falsely accused of murdering his partner thing. Between the lawyers and losing his job and flat, and the relatively high publicity surrounding the whole ordeal, he could barely scrape together the funds to move out here, slim as they were. His bank accounts are dry. His pockets empty. He's managed to pick up a job in town at a bookshop, but the pay is nowhere near that of his previous job. Only enough for the necessary food expenses, property taxes, and the like. Arthur, quite literally, has nowhere else to go. So, when he startles awake in the middle of his second night there to a voice hissing in his ear,
"Leave this place,"
he swallows, reaches for his earplugs, and lies on his side with his eyes firmly shut until his heartbeat calms down enough to allow him to fall asleep once again. "That place up on the hill?" the bookshop owner says the next day, raising a thin eyebrow. "Didn't think they were still letting people live there." "Yes. Well, I do, and I just wanted to know if you knew any history about it." The bookshop owner, Mr. Abernathy, Arthur recalls, shrugs. "Sure. Been here since the town was built back in 1795? Something like that. Beautiful place once upon a time. Nobody's quite sure what happened to it. Death, maybe, but nothing that's on record. Either way, it's almost certainly cursed." Cursed? Not a single person who's moved into that house over the past century or so has stayed more than a few months. They hear voices, apparently. Keeps them up at night, wears away at their sanity. Pastor Emmanuel thinks it could be some sort of demon, but no blessing or exorcism has ever done much good. Mr. Abernathy eyes Arthur. "If you don't mind me saying so, it's in your best interest to move. That place, nobody should live there. Should have been turned down decades ago."
"Thank you for your concern, but I'm afraid moving is not quite an option for me at the moment. I simply wanted some context so that if things do happen, I am prepared to handle them to the best of my ability."
Mr. Abernathy stares at Arthur a moment more before shrugging and turning away.
"All right. Can't say I didn't warn you. Can you shelve the new arrivals for me?"
"Certainly." As Arthur turns to head farther into the bookstore, box in arms, Mr. Abernathy says,
"And Mr. Lester?"
Arthur pauses.
"Yes? You'd be wise to wear iron. Keeps the demons at bay."
Arthur swallows.
I will take it under advisement, Mr. Abernathy.
Mr. Abernathy grunts and lets him be. He blessedly says nothing when Arthur slides him a few coins in exchange for a book on spirits and the supernatural. Just in case.
That isn't going to help you.
Arthur is not ashamed to admit that he startles quite badly when the disembodied voice speaks into his ear yet again. He takes a shaky breath, then returns to his task of painting the symbol he had found in the book on the doorframe in front of him. "Maybe not," he says, feeling a bit silly as he talks to what is, by all appearances, empty air. "But it can't hurt, either. Besides, this is my house. I can decorate it how I please." There is a long pause. Then the voice chuckles, low and deep in a way that sends an unwanted shiver down Arthur's spine.
"Is it now?"
"Given that it is my name on the lease, yes, it is." Arthur dips the paintbrush back into the bucket a touch aggressively, and the pale yellow paint within splatters across his trousers. "Done." The temperature of the air around him drops without warning, and his breath fogs in front of him.
"This is my house, not yours. It belongs to me. Leave now."
Arthur's breaths are coming quicker than he would like, and before he can think about the consequences of such a statement, he snaps, "Make me." The air is thick with tension, and Arthur can hardly breathe for it. For a moment, he is sure, absolutely certain, that he is looking at the last few moments of his life. Then, voice tight with ice-cold fury, the thing that haunts his home snarls,
"You will regret this, Arthur Lester."
The tension snaps like a thin rubber band, and Arthur gasps as the pressure on his chest lifts. He stands atop the kitchen chair he dragged over in order to paint the sigil, breathing heavily and trying to calm the rapid-fire beating of his heart. His knees feel wobbly, made of jelly. He sinks down to sit on the chair, pulling his head into his hands and focusing on slowing his breathing, lest he begin to panic in earnest. That had, perhaps, not been wise. After a full week without incident, Arthur is feeling considerably less panicked and considerably more tired of the situation he's found himself in. "I don't regret it yet," he says, trying to sound casual as he stirs the soup he's making. "Not that I'm trying to encourage you to enact your unholy revenge upon me. I like living, actually. And I also like all my body parts and such intact and where they should be. But I just thought I should say it, in case we aren't on the same page about this." It takes almost 10 minutes for the spirit to respond.
"You are a remarkably irritating man."
"I've been told so once or twice, yes." The spirit growls, low enough that it rumbles the floor slightly.
"I'm working on it, okay? You think this is easy? I don't have a fucking body."
"And you are remarkably touchy, whatever it is you are."
"Well, what do you think I am?"
"If I had to guess," Arthur says, settling his spoon down and retrieving some spices from the cupboard, "I'd say a ghost, which sounds preposterous, but, well, Here we are.
Congratulations. Your investigative skills are unparalleled.
No need to be rude.
There is a need, because I want you to leave.
Yes, you said, and I said that I'm still waiting for you to force me out. It appears we are at a stalemate.
We are not.
The ghost cuts off with a frustrated noise.
Fine. So tell me what I have to say to convince you to leave me the fuck alone.
I thought you were going to do something. Make me regret it? Is that not on the table anymore? The ghost's growl rumbles through the house, and Arthur barely catches the salt shaker before it tips off the counter and onto the floor.
Oh, it is very much still on the table. I just thought I might be diplomatic first, give you a chance to live with your wits and your body intact.
Arthur sets the salt shaker down on the counter and sighs. Well, I'm not going anywhere. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't. So you may as well just give up now. There's a pause, long enough that Arthur assumes the ghost has disappeared to wherever it goes when it's not yelling at him. Then, just as he is turning off the stove, the ghost says,
Why?
Why what?
Why couldn't you leave?
That's honestly none of your business.
It is my business. If you are going to be staying here.
A pause.
If I am going to allow you to stay here.
The ghost amends. You are not allowing me to do anything. This is my house. I bought it. It's my name on the lease.
And it is my bones buried underneath the floorboards, which makes it my house.
That's a disquieting image. Arthur tries to put it out of his mind as he begins ladling the soup into his bowl. Well, I suppose we'll just have to share it then. It will be our house. The spirit doesn't say anything, just growls lowly, like it is not pleased by the prospect, but can't think of a good argument against it. Oh, don't be like that. It will be an adjustment for both of us. You'll have to get used to having me around, and I'll have to get used to talking to an invisible, intangible voice that I'm still not entirely convinced isn't only in my head.
I assure you, I am very much real.
That is what a voice that is only in my head would say, so I'm afraid I can't put much stock in it.
You are infuriating. Get out of my fucking house.
I told you, I can't. Arthur collects his soup and sits down at the kitchen table, a round wooden thing that looks to be centuries old. This is just how it's going to be. I don't suppose you can eat soup, can you? I've certainly made enough to share. The spirit's irritated grumbling is answer enough. Despite what Arthur likes to tell himself, he is not fearless, and despite what others tell him, he does understand how to be cautious and careful. Unfortunately, that does not equate to being any less stubborn or curious or impulsive or any of the other things that usually land him in situations such as this. What the fuck do you think you're playing at?
Arthur snaps, trying to hide the fact that he's fucking terrified underneath a thick mask of anger and frustration. The voice comes from everywhere all at once.
Oh, Arthur, I did say you would regret it. You just assumed I had forgotten.
No, I assumed we had come to an agreement. You know, the one where you let me live in peace and I don't find a way to exorcise you.
I recall agreeing to no such thing.
Fucking bastard! Arthur takes a few steps forward and promptly bangs his shin against something hard and unforgiving. Fuck! Okay, that's enough. Give me back my sight, you asshole! The answering chuckle makes Arthur grit his teeth.
No, I still don't have a body of my own, so I've gotten creative. This will have to do for now.
Do for what? A pause.
I want to leave this place.
Arthur is breathing hard, on a knife's edge between panic and fury. What?
I want...
The spirit repeats, sounding irritated.
To leave this place. Surely that isn't too difficult a concept for you to understand.
After all this about you wanting me to leave, now you do?
This is different. I am not leaving for good. I'm just stretching my legs, so to speak. If you are not going to let me exist in peace, the least you can do is help me get out of this fucking house for the first time in centuries. Consider it rent.
Rent? Arthur says in disbelief. Fuck you. You don't own this house, and you do not own my eyes. Give them back.
No.
Then, when Arthur's breathing starts to come quicker and more ragged...
Relax, Arthur. This isn't permanent. I can choose to leave your body whenever I want, and everything else besides your eyes still belongs to you.
Oh, yes. Because that's reassuring. How do I know you're ever going to leave at all?
You don't. You'll just have to trust me when I say that I will.
Bullshit.
Arthur, listen to me. I am fucking tired of this place. Imagine you are stuck here, year after year, with no body, no way to leave, nothing to do but linger at the boundary between life and death, and try to let yourself fade enough that the days don't pass by at an agonizing pace. Forgive me if I am desperate for a change of scenery.
Then why try to force me to leave? Surely having someone around is better than having nobody.
I get a bit territorial.
Despite everything, Arthur can't help but laugh at that. Territorial?
My body is attached to this place, Arthur. I am tied to it. If it burns, I burn. So yes, I'm a little bit fucking territorial.
The thought crosses Arthur's mind, just for a moment, that it wouldn't be difficult at all to find enough petrol to set the entire place alight within minutes. But it is not a realistic notion, aside from the fact that he would be well and truly fucked then, with no savings and nowhere to live. He is not entirely sure what would happen to him with the ghost still attached to his body. Would it be pulled away cleanly, or would it bring his eyes with it? Best not to risk it. Fine, I suppose that makes sense. Arthur feels his way along the wall to his couch. sitting heavily and running a hand through his hair. So, what then? You are going to use my eyes to see things.
Unless you know some other function that they possess.
Arthur laughs wryly. Right, of course, right. This is... Fuck. Okay, I have to go to work in a few minutes and I can't fucking see, but this is... This is fine.
Relax. I will guide you.
How do I know you're not going to run me into doors for the fun of it? Arthur does not say. He doesn't want to give the ghost ideas. They are halfway to town before a thought occurs to him. If we are going to be sharing a body, at least for the time being, I'd like to know your name. You know mine. I feel it's only fair. The ghost is quiet for a long moment. Long enough that Arthur begins to worry that it's gone and he has truly, actually lost his sight. Then, quietly,
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
That's what I said, isn't it?
The ghost snaps. Then, after a moment,
when you've spent as much time between worlds as I have, things begin to sleep away. Identity, personhood. I remember very few things about myself. I was a man, I believe. I think I lived alone, though that's just an extrapolation based on the fact that as far as I know, I'm the only spirit inhabiting the house. Beyond that,
I'm sorry, Arthur says, and he means it.
It's not a big deal.
Still, to not remember anything about oneself, I imagine it's quite a lonely existence.
It is.
Hmm? I suppose you're a John Doe, then.
A what?
Oh, it's a moniker given to unidentified individuals, often deceased ones, John Doe, sort of a catch-all name for those who have none. The ghost hums. They walk in silence for a few more moments before he, Arthur supposes, says,
John.
Hmm?
My name. You can call me John.
Well? Arthur says, smiling despite the truly unusual situation he's somehow landed himself in. It's nice to meet you, John. Things became not quite routine after that, but something close to it. For the first week or so afterward, Arthur wakes in a panic, momentarily forgetting his current situation in a haze of, I can't see, why can't I see, oh Jesus, oh fucking God. John soothes him every time, which is a bit strange at first, but Arthur gets used to it. He supposes one can get used to anything with enough time and exposure. He is able to move around much more deftly than he thought he would be able to, largely due to John in his ear guiding him around corners and through doors, though the third time Arthur stubs his toe on something accompanied by John's deep, rumbling laughter, he begins to suspect that this is John's way of being humorous. Perhaps it is because John has only seen the inside of the same house for hundreds of years. Or perhaps the man is a poet at heart, but the descriptions Arthur receives of a town he had perceived as average at best are nothing short of eloquent. It is a surprisingly endearing quality. Equally as surprising is the fact that Arthur feels endeared in the first place by the ghost possessing his eyes, but it is, well, he likes John. It is a feeling that grows over the weeks, despite their frequent arguments, and the reality of the situation looming over them, and the fact that John can really be a right prick when he wants to be. Though John would tell him that he can be the same, has told him, in fact, many times, they should not be memories that Arthur is fond of, but he is. Arthur gets the impression that underneath all the snarls and prickliness, John is longing for something. Something he's scared he may not ever get. Identity, maybe, or freedom. It comes out when he talks about his history with the house, when they speculate about who he was, when Arthur takes a trip to the local courthouse and spends an afternoon digging through the records in an attempt to find something that sparks recognition within John. Nothing does, and John leaves the encounter sullen and snappish. Arthur picks up a book that night and has John read it to him, and that becomes folded into the routine as well, another thread in the tapestry of their relationship. In their third week together, fifth since Arthur moved into the house, Arthur tells John about why he came here, to Harper's Hill. He tells him about Parker and the accident, and the trials and the near bankruptcy. He's not sure how he expected John to respond. With a joke? With a half-hearted platitude? With a dismissive comment? He didn't expect John to say,
"I am sorry I tried to force you to leave."
More earnest than Arthur's ever heard him before. Something in Arthur's chest tightened at the words, refusing to loosen even as the weeks rolled on. It all comes together a few months after Arthur moved to Harper's Hill, when Mr. Abernathy makes a comment about Arthur spending so much time talking to himself. Arthur, who had genuinely forgotten that that was something other people might take note of, makes up an excuse about it helping him focus and ignores John's hissed,
"Don't tell him about me."
"Because of course I'm not going to tell him about you, John. Come off it." Mr. Abernathy doesn't look entirely convinced, but all he says before returning to the back storage room is, "You ought to find some friends, Mr. Lester. It can get awfully lonely talking to yourself all the time." And when Arthur has to bite back and, "I've already got friends," it clicks. John is his friend. His best friend. They are closer, perhaps, than even he and Parker had been, which is a thought. Arthur decides not to linger on, given that Parker's death is still a bit of a raw subject for him. It is something Arthur doesn't put much stock in at first, because as well as they got on once the initial hostility faded, John is still technically possessing his body against his will. Is it against anyone's will anymore? That's another thought Arthur tries not to examine too closely. Still, he can't seem to forget about it once it's occurred to him. So, one night, after they've shut their book, Gulliver's Travels, which John had picked out from the bookshop after significant needling from Arthur to just pick a fucking book, John, for Christ's sake. And Arthur decides, fuck it, and broaches the subject. "John, can we have a discussion?"
"Of course,"
John says. If he has any indication of what Arthur means, he doesn't show it in his voice. "Right. I wanted to talk about my eyes. Our eyes." John's voice is guarded when he says,
"What about them?"
"I'm not asking you to leave, if that's what you're worried about."
"I'm not worried. Why would I be worried? The leaving will be on my terms, not yours."
A pause.
if you're worried, I assure you, I still have no intentions of making this a permanent situation.
Right. No, yes, you're right. This isn't permanent. Arthur laughs a bit wryly. Honestly, though, I can't really remember clearly what it was like to be able to see things. It's been so long, I've grown used to it.
Have you?
John doesn't sound judgmental or skeptical, just a touch curious. Yes, I suppose one can get used to anything, given the right motivations. But regardless, that wasn't what I meant, either.
Then what did you mean?
I suppose I meant that... Arthur hesitates, considering this isn't something he can unsay, and he wants to be sure of it. I suppose I mean that I am glad to have met you. We've come a long way since our first meeting, I believe, and I don't know. I think we get on well, don't you?
I suppose we do, Arthur. If you are trying to tell me something, would you please just quit dancing around it and say it?
Right. Yes, of course. Well, you know that it was difficult to adjust at first to not having my sight. There are times when we still don't quite see eye to eye, no pun intended. There are still things I miss, not being able to see the sunrise, for example, or needing the illustrations in books described to me, but there are also things I have come to appreciate, like the way a book feels when read out loud, and the nuances of the sounds around me. And I do mean it when I say I would rather this not be a permanent situation. I do, but I also...
Arthur, for fuck's sake, just say it.
You can have my eyes, Arthur says, all at once like an exhalation. There is a long pause during which all Arthur can hear is the rush of his own heartbeat in his ears. Then...
What?
You can have my eyes, Arthur repeats, steadier, surer of himself. If you would like, perhaps when we're here in the house we could separate, as you're able to exist on your own. But for the rest of it, I'm willing to be this for you. Your way to be a part of the world outside of this place.
You're sure?
John sounds hesitant.
Arthur, this isn't a decision that you should make lightly. Taking possession of your eyes for the first time, it took most of my strength. I likely would not be able to do it again by force, should you find some way to cast me out. But if you are willing, it...
John trails off.
If you give me permission,
he says slowly,
I will be able to repossess you any time you are in this house. You cannot take it back. You may come to regret it.
Maybe. Arthur concedes. Maybe not. But honestly, John, it's been some time since I felt genuinely disquieted by your presence. Perhaps if you had some control over the rest of my body, I might feel differently. But even if I did come to regret it, my will and actions would still be my own.
But not your sight.
No, not my sight. In any case, it doesn't matter, because I don't believe I'll regret it.
You cannot possibly know that.
No, but I know you.
Do you? We don't even know my real name, Arthur. We know nothing about me.
I know that you like to read,
Arthur counters. All kinds of books, but with a particular soft spot for adventure and happy endings. I know that your favorite spot in town is the bluffs overlooking the lake because you like the blue of the water, the way the wind stings your eyes when it's strong enough. I know that your favorite flavor of ice cream is strawberry because even though you can't taste it, you like the color of it, the vibrant pink. I know that you snap when you are upset or scared and that you regret hurtful things immediately after you say them, but double down regardless because sometimes your conviction in yourself is all you have to defend yourself with. I know that you care about other people, the lady who lives next door whose flowers you admire, the elderly woman struggling with her groceries, just the other day who you insisted we help, the young boy who nearly fell off the cliffs while chasing after his dog last week and would have done so had we not stopped him in time. And, Arthur says, feeling all at once terribly vulnerable, I know that you're my friend. I trust you. You mean a lot to me, John. I can only hope that you may feel the same. There are a few bits of silence, during which Arthur worries his thumb along the edges of the book pages. Then, softly,
You are my friend as well, Arthur, if you are sure about this.
I am.
Then, all right.
Arthur isn't quite sure how to describe what happens then, a tingling feeling deep in his skull. A sensation not unlike that of falling off a very tall cliff. Then, between one blink and the next, the world, for so long nothing but nothingness, explodes into color so bright he is blinded by it. Ah! Arthur presses the heels of his hands to his eyes, but he can still see the light shadow of the lamplight burned into his corneas.
Fucking hell, John!
John chuckles, low and rambling.
My apologies.
You might at least try to sound more convincing, Arthur grouses. Fuck, where's the switch for the lamp?
To your left. No. Your other left, Arthur, a bit higher. Yes, you've got it.
The light bleed from his eyelids vanishes as he flicks the lamp off. Arthur tentatively opens his eyes again to darkness. Not pure black like has been his reality for the past few months, but close enough that it is familiar.
Well?
John says, his voice sounds like it is coming from everywhere at once, yet also like he is speaking directly into Arthur's ear. It is exactly the same as it's always been, like nothing has changed at all, and Arthur smiles. Come on, he says, standing up and heading towards the door that leads to the porch, where he knows John will be able to follow. Let's go look at the stars. Perhaps you can describe them to me.
But you'll be able to see them yourself.
True.
Then why?
Humor me. Arthur opens the door and steps out onto the porch. He sits on a wooden swinging bench, set up near the edge, padded with worn pillows. They had bought them secondhand a few weeks after John became Arthur's eyes, so he's never seen the faded, cherry-red hue in person. It is somehow duller than he had expected, and he doesn't think it is a consequence of any of the faintness of the moon and starlight. Well? John sighs in that exasperated way that Arthur knows by now hides fondness.
Fine. Above us lies the night sky, black at its center and tinged blue around the horizon, where the light of the sun still bleeds into it. The stars are many, forming glittering white constellations that overlap one another and create an impression not unlike that of a river or perhaps an ocean. To our left, a purple nebulous cloud can be seen, glowing a pale yellow near its center, like there is a great storm brewing somewhere deep in the cosmos. To our right lies.
As Jung continues to speak, describing the world around him like it is something wondrous, Arthur closes his eyes, tilts his head back, and smiles. The end. This has been recorded for Katie Hart as a ITP 2022 gift. I hope you enjoy.